You can find all he does as we get closer and closer to college football season for USA Today, which you can follow at usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, how are you on this Wednesday, sir?
I'm really good. How are you?
All right. Hey, I was listening to your Football 4 podcast, and am I accurate in saying I almost hear that tone in your voice where you're starting to realize, hey, football season's almost here?
Yeah, and of course, the topic of the Football 4 podcast, we had Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com on, was had everything to do with this whole Big 12 expansion thing, which has consumed the latter stages of many sports writers' summers. And so we are excited for the fact that there will actually be balls kicked into the air and touchdowns scored and interceptions to be made and things like that. I mean, I can't tell you how much I want the games to start. And we are what? The 26th, right? Cal in Hawaii. Cal versus Hawaii in Sydney, Australia. So, you know, a week and a half away, right? I can't wait.
A week from tomorrow. By the way, you and I have talked about it. You've written about it. But obviously, to hear Dennis's insight as well, being a guy who's completely wired in, what did he have to say about how he sees how realistic Big 12 expansion is, whether it's a plan to add two or four, a plan at all? What does he see when he looks in his crystal ball?
Well, first of all, I would just say that Dennis is a fine reporter, and he's making a lot of phone calls, as a lot of people are who are in on this story in and around Big 12 country and just nationally. And what he's hearing is a lot like what apparently a lot of us have heard, which is basically nobody knows anything. And I say that only halfway facetiously. We're talking to a lot of the people who should know stuff and who don't, quite frankly. Because I'm not convinced that the Big 12 presidents are at this stage really know what they're going to do or if they're going to do something, which schools they're going to do it with at this point. And I think we're in the stage now where Bob Bowlesby, the commissioner, is doing his fact-finding. I mean, famously, they're going to have video conferencing with 20 schools, which is about 15 overkill. But at least 10 overkill, because there's 10 of them that had – you know, even if we accept the premise that the Big 12 is going to pluck two group of five schools, or four or whatever, which, you know, you and I have talked about, doesn't make a ton of sense, but that probably what they're going to do is take a couple. You know, at least 10 out of that bunch of 20 have zero shot. But right now, Bob Bowlesby, to get back to my point, is in the midst of fact-finding, and at some point he's going to come out, emerge from that, and talk to the two or three presidents who are in their composition committee, and from there, the rest of the presidents in the Big 12, and they're going to come up with a plan that says, hey, we think we should expand by four, and here are the four schools. What do you think? Or we think we should expand by two. Here are your three or four options. Which two should it be? Or, you know what, maybe we shouldn't expand at all. And the problem is nobody really knows which direction they're going to go right now. Although I will say this, I do think the momentum for adding four, which people sort of giddily talked about, you know, back at the end of last month when they announced this sort of pedal to the metal push for expansion, I think that's subsided tremendously. I think that's the least likely possibility, that they expand by four. I think the probably the more likely possibility is they expand by two. But I think the idea that they might stand pat, which I think none of us thought they would do when they made this announcement back in July, I think the idea they might stay at 10 is valid and is maybe gaining a little bit of momentum.
Well, one final thought on this. You guys brought up a very interesting topic in BYU. And, of course, when that surfaced, there was that protest letter from the LGBT community. And you both hit on it. 2016, we live in different times. It's an obstacle, I think you guys mentioned, what happened with the NBA All-Star Game. How big a factor do you think that could be among the Big 12 presidents if they were to consider the Cougs?
Well, I'll say two things. One, whether or not it should be something they consider, it's clearly going to be something they consider, because college presidents are completely controversy averse. They're not much on taking stands one way or the other in a lot of ways. And
right.
So if you don't, you know, the path of least resistance is a big deal. When you start out with the fact that BYU, and I was talking with someone involved with the Big 12 earlier, I don't want to say a whole lot more, earlier today, who said, look, all of the issues that you think about with BYU, none of them ever went away in terms of the logistical things like the fact that they're geographically far, far away from all the Big 12 schools, the fact that they don't play any of their sports on Sunday, which doesn't matter in football, but matters tremendously in several other sports.
Sure.
The fact that coaches don't like the fact that because some of their players have served Mormon missions, they've got these 24 and 25-year-old seniors, and a lot of them. Some coaches don't like sort of playing that imbalance versus, you know, 20-year-olds. For a bunch of reasons, BYU has been sort of a hard sell in the league, even though they've got a Power 5 size fan base, a Power 5 size financial base, and a Power 5 size stadium and things like that. They're the one school that is like a Power 5. And, in fact, you know, some leagues consider playing BYU to fulfill the you have to play a Power 5 non-conference requirement. All of those things were still there. When you add the sort of the off the field, for lack of a better term, controversy with the LGBT protest and with some reporting on whether or not BYU's honor code has been a problem for gay students. Look, regardless of where you fall on any of those issues, that's sort of a reason to sort of wash your hands of the whole deal if you're a Big 12 president. I think BYU might have been the one no-brainer in terms of if you weren't thinking of those kinds of things, but I think it's problematic for the Big 12 presidents now.
Valid points all. Very quickly, I want to hit on Art Briles. He was at the Houston Texans camp this week, and he made a statement about he's never done anything illegal, immoral, unethical. He even ended with a joke about lost dogs.
Yeah.
When you consider the nature of this case, the fact that it doesn't seem to be shrinking but rather growing, his being out there like this, kind of almost like all is well, I need to get back into coaching. Are we wrong? Are certain people wrong with this just not sitting right?
No, it's not sitting right. You're not wrong. You have no idea, Steve, how much that pains me to say, but you're not wrong.
Nice.
And I'm kidding. But
I gotcha.
Art Briles is, if he really believes the stuff he's saying, first of all, I would say that folksy is not the right tone to discuss these matters. And now, Art Briles is nothing if not folksy, but there's a time when you need to dial that stuff back completely. So that's the wrong tone to start with. So you don't talk about football being like my lost dog and I got to find it again.
Right.
You don't do that. That doesn't work. Secondly, it's pretty clear he's tone deaf to the whole issue. Regardless of whether he thinks he did anything wrong, and frankly, regardless of whether he actually did anything wrong, the deal is there's a stigma that's going to be attached to him, and maybe forever, but certainly for a long time. And he's not helping things by being out there and available to reporters and then saying the things he's saying. I mean, I think it's great if you want to talk to reporters, but they're going to want to see some kind of being forthright and regret. Not what people are hearing. When I say them, I mean the public that would then
sure.
listen to the words reported by the reporters. But I'm of the opinion that he is, and maybe I'm wrong because I've got colleagues, we've talked about this recently, but I'm of the opinion that he is deluded when he thinks he's going to have a job, especially as a college head coach come December, i.e. when the next coaching carousel opens up. Because I think it's hard for me to see an athletic director taking Art Briles' name as here's the guy we want to hire to a college president and then saying, and then them kind of going, how are we going to sell this? Even if they could say, we think we should do this, how are they going to sell that to their fan base, to their media, to the various groups that are going to get revved up and riled up, and rightly so, I think, if and when you bring that name out.
Yeah.
I just think it's a toxic situation.
Yeah, and that gets back to what you said originally about presidents being controversy adverse.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. Look, they are not – I mean, even in situations where maybe a courageous stand is called for, college presidents aren't sort of at the forefront of making those stands, quite frankly. And in neither one of these two situations that we've just discussed, am I suggesting – that they ought to make some sort of courageous stand. I am just suggesting that sort of intrinsic to the position is sort of a let's not create unnecessary controversy. That's sort of a part of the job, or the, at least the way they approach it, I think.
We're talking with George Schroeder, USA Today. You visited South Bend, and I know you've been to pretty much every legendary college football venue probably multiple times, whether it's the SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, out here, bowl sites. Still, when you get to go to South Bend and visit Notre Dame, your personal ranking, how high on the goosebumps or storied history kind of totem pole does that rank?
Oh, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. But look, you're right in that I've been really fortunate to be able to go to a lot of different places. And, you know, I was in Columbus earlier this My days are all off now.
It's Wednesday now.
Saturday and Sunday I was in Columbus, and going to the Horseshoe is as cool as going to me as going to Notre Dame Stadium. I mean, and that's no slight to Notre Dame Stadium, but I mean, I think I don't see Notre Dame as elevated in stature above sort of the other five or ten perennial winners. I mean, I'm a guy who, you know, when I was out in Eugene, enjoyed every time we got to all go down, troop down, and watch Oregon play in the Coliseum. You know, and you'd see that giant band dressed up like, you know, Trojans, and it looked like a bunch of extras in a Cecil B. DeMille movie, except for the Ray-Bans they all had on.
Nice.
You know, and it, to me, it was like, this screams, it's the only thing on the West Coast that really screams college football traditional pageantry. And so I'm a sucker for all of that. So Notre Dame doesn't do it for me any more than, like, the rest of those guys do. I mean, I savor each and every time you get to go see one of those places.
I get you. The Blue Bloods.
Yeah, absolutely. And we could, you know, we could probably spend a whole nother segment just debating who fits that bill and who doesn't. But regardless, you know, if we all sort of, you know, boil down who those are, if you go to Michigan or Ohio State or Notre Dame or USC or, you know, you go catch a game in Alabama or, you know, or
Texas,
maybe
Oklahoma,
Texas. Yeah, I mean, those are special places on a Saturday night, and they're special even in August when the stadium is empty.
Now, high hopes for Notre Dame last season, and they had that blowout against Texas. But then in week two, their quarterback, Malik Zaire, goes down. Then DeShone Kizer comes in, almost beat Clemson in Death Valley, got to the Fiesta Bowl. So heading into this year, what does Coach Brian Kelly have to say about who starts? Or is it a case of, hey, everybody should have this problem?
Well, when I was there a week ago, he was talking about maybe it was a week and a half ago now. I should like get my consult my calendar before I do the show because everything runs together this time of year. But he was talking about how either quarterback would be a good answer and that he's not enjoying having to make the call. And Malik Zaire is a big-time good player, and DeShone Kizer turned out to be really, really good too when he came in. And frankly, I think he's more of the prototype guy. He's a little bit less of a runner, but when they realized he could run the zone read option last year was when I think they really recognized that I think the offense can advance with him. But Zaire made it look so easy in his limited action at the end of the 2014 season and then blowing out Texas last year before he got hurt that, you know, he's a big-time playmaker. So today at Notre Dame's media day, Brian Kelly basically said, we're going to play both of them against Texas. I'm not naming a starter right now. But I will tell you this, we're going to play both of them at Texas. Neither quarterback apparently was real happy with that. But Kelly says that's two of the five best, that, you know, that's two of his five best playmakers. How do you set one of them? And which is great, but it strikes me as this could be a problem for you at some point, a la Ohio State.
I got you. By the way, for folks who are wondering, that's the Sunday after the big opener on a Saturday.
Absolutely. So September 4th, it's a night game, and NFL hadn't cranked up yet, and it'll be a ton of fun. I mean, Texas itself is a fascinating story, but now Notre Dame's got a little drama to get with, too.
I want to finish with the Olympics because we talked last week, and you're like, as of right now, I'm far from captivated. But you said we'll see what happens as track and field and some of the other events take place, whether it be the performance of Usain Bolt, the American gymnast, you know, having spent a lot of time here following a duck like Devin Allen. What's your level of engagement here midweek, a week later?
track started, and I got excited about the Olympics. That's how it went. And, you know, when I moved to Eugene, I would not have considered myself a track fan. Doesn't mean I didn't like the sport. It's just that it hadn't been something I grew up with. But, you know, I quickly became sort of indoctrinated into the ways of track town, and it's such a fantastic sport. And so I follow track a whole lot more closely than I used to. You know, I was fortunate enough to go to the Olympics in Beijing in 2008.
Right.
You know, and so I saw the 2008 emergence of Bolt when he had that unbelievable run in the 100 and pulled up and still set the world record, which he's since lowered again.
Right.
And then a few days later, he sets a record in the 200, which, of course, he's again lowered. And it was that 100 meters in Beijing was and probably forever will remain the most impressive athletic feat I've ever witnessed in person. And so to see him, you know, so watching him on TV, you know, run another 100 and blow people away and all that kind of stuff, that was really cool, and I enjoyed it this last week. But it wasn't as, you know, nothing will ever be as impressive to me as that Beijing thing was. And not just because I was in person, but I mean, that's the biggest deal. But Usain Bolt is the reason that I just got enthused. Now, it was fun watching Devin Allen. I've enjoyed watching. I love watching the distance races. I mean, I like all of it, you know. So, I mean, Ashton Eaton, you know, he's going now. So.
Right.
You know, great stuff. Once the track started, to answer your question, then I got really excited about the Olympics.
All right. Follow him, usatoday.com, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Always look forward to it, George. Great stuff. We'll catch up next week.
All right, man. Thanks, and go Sluggers.
Take it easy.